Blog Talk Radio.
And we're back with 96 Live. I'm your host, Robert Hart, and we're broadcasting today from the 96 National Historic Site at Starport, 1103 Highway 248, 96 South Carolina. And they're having a food and harvest recreation today from 10 till 2. And what that's about is fall is just around the corner. Saving the bring in the crops, choose meat, and put away food for the coming winter. Join us here to learn what to grow, how to save, what crops they grow, and how to preserve food without refrigerators and freezers. Now, we have quite a few people walking around today. It's a beautiful day, like breeze. So come on out, it's a free event, bring family. And our next scheduled broadcast will be October the 10th, back here at Starport again. Which is Highway 248, about 2 miles south of 96, just out past the high school. And like I said, we'll be back out here on October 10th for the autumn candlelight tour. And they'll have guided battlefield tours from 6:50 to 8:20. Tours will depart every 10 minutes. It's approximately a 1 mile walk and takes about an hour and 15 minutes. Wear comfortable walking shoes. And living the stories along the trail portray 18th century life. The visitor center will be open from 9 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. Each tour is limited to 50 people. And you can call the visitor center to reserve your free ticket. And the phone number is 864-543-4068. And guided tours also start out here weekly every Friday and Saturday at 11 and 2 p.m. Like I said, it's a free event today. I had quite a few people wandering around this morning. We also had a group out from West Department. They showed up today. They're about enjoying things. We'll be going out to the log cabin in a few moments. They have an old style brick oven that they're firing up to make some bread in. Inside the log cabin, I know they've got some split pea soup on the fire and a few other items, but we'll find out more about that shortly. We're going to step into the visitor center real quick and see if we can find out a bit more information about what's going on here today. Hello, how are you today?
Good.
Hi, what is your name?
Adrian.
Okay, can you tell us what's going on here today?
We have a living history day with reenactors that come out and show what people back in the 18th century how their lives were. Today we're focusing on food and variation thereof, their herbs, fresh foods, stored foods, what's in the pantry, cooking, anything like that.
Okay. Are you doing anything in particular today? Or?
I'm kind of talking about the herbs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll say your herbs.
Just like your herbs that are in our herb garden.
Okay. Could you tell us a few of those?
Some of the easier ones to pick out are lemon balm. That would have been used in cooking. It was a great substitute for lemon, peel, lemon juice, and things like jelly. It also is a little bit of a luxury product. If you cook it up and rub the fresh leaves on your skin, it kind of helps keep the heat in that day at least a little. It was also medicinal. A lot of your herbs had multiple uses for food, which we did not today. And then some of the other herbs we had mint, which we still drink mint. We added things, especially desserts, but then we added it to other things like soup as well. And then used it for the medicinal purposes as well, to help with your congestion and breathing. Because it's kind of a little bit toxic if you eat it. Even if you have the found a lot of different research wells. And that one also was medicinal. We have some lambs here. This is one of the herbs that really only has one use.
Okay.
And you don't eat it. It's got a really nice, soft leaf. And that would have acted as a natural bandage for wounds. You could also use it as like a washcloth.
Oh, okay.
So one of the few ones that's not everywhere. A lot of your herbs, like your mint and rosemary and oregano and stuff like that, you could also kind of strew around your house to freshen your house.
Okay.
Add it to sachets, which I actually have one in my pocket. Sachets were just little bags of stuff that smelled good, basically, because
okay.
You know, they didn't take baths very
right.
often, so it kind of helped control some of the body odor.
Oh, okay.
Put a sachet, or if you were had a really bad smell, you know, put it up there. But those are just some of them. We have some more herbs over there, but the bigger ones, those are the bigger ones that are pretty easy to see.
Oh, okay.
And what you're looking at.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. And also, while we're here, I was going to speak a bit about African Americans in 96. They played an important role in the settlement and development of 18th century cat country, South Carolina. During the 1760s and 70s, European immigrants often brought hundreds of slaves on a two-week journey from the coast to the rugged 96 wilderness. The local African Americans were expert brickmakers, farmers, wagoners, cattle drivers, and some were instrumental in assisting with the construction of the Star Fort. Many slaves were involved in cultivation and processing of indigo, a dye extracted from indigo plants grown here on Robert Galley's plantation. Like white settlers, African Americans had to adapt to life on the frontier. Slaves lived in meager wooden or log houses and often cultivated their own small gardens. Many slaves maintained portions of their African culture as verified by a slave-made ceremonial bowl displayed here at the visitor center. It was found here by archaeologists and was made of local clay, and this type of pottery was common in coastal West Africa. Now, what we're going to do now is we're going to transition from the visitor center over towards the old log cabin where most of the activity is going on today. And I had put the food on the stove earlier. Not sure if it's done yet or if we'll get a chance at some point. Like I said, I know they had split pea soup. And they're supposed to be putting some bread and something else in the oven outside the cabin. And I said, we'll find out when we get there. So heading over to the cabin now. And excuse me, would you like to say a few words? Okay, what is your name and where are you from?
I'm Andrea, and I'm from Wesley Commons. I have a group from Wesley Commons Retirement Community in Greenwood.
Okay, why did you bring them out here today?
For Living History Day, and just for a group trip, and we're going to have a picnic afterwards.
All right. So are you enjoying this trip so far?
Yeah, it's a beautiful day for it. It's a good way, good start to fall.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, that's one of the groups that came out here today. We're going to move back over to the log cabin and see what else we can find out today. How are you doing this morning? So the log cabin, they had there's a bunch of items on the table this morning. I know they had onions, potatoes, I believe it was parsley, grits. They had eggs. Can't remember all the items, but we're heading into the kitchen now to see what we can find out. And, yes, they're here waiting on us. So, it looks like soup's on. It looks really good. Of course, we have an excellent chef today. I said, we have a split pea soup over the stove right now. I mean, over the fire right now. There is no stove. And what else are we cooking here today?
We are cooking fried Johnny cakes and bread and cookies out in the oven.
Okay.
I'm going to be making some fried potatoes over the fire.
All right. Now, you were telling me earlier about the eggs,
mm-hmm.
that they didn't use them for breakfast.
No, eggs are not a breakfast food during colonial times. Okay. We eat them for lunch or for supper, never for breakfast. It's not a breakfast food.
Okay.
A lot of their foods were one dish left over, like the Johnny cakes is a leftover cornmeal mush sliced up and fried, or you would use whatever leftover things you had, meat, and put it in your stew or soup. Because it took so much work to get every little piece of food, you can never let any of it go to waste.
Okay, what else do we have here on the table?
Well, we have eggs, which were from the chicken, and which were never refrigerated. But if an egg hasn't been refrigerated ever, then it can keep its... The usual shelf life for an egg is 6 weeks refrigerated, and it's about 6 days unrefrigerated.
Okay.
And then we have rosemary. They would use some spices, herbs, anything they could grow. They could trade for it. Nutmeg was a favorite. Almost all period recipes from colonial times had nutmeg in it. And it was a traded for spice that didn't grow in America.
And these are the peas?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But dried peas, very, very common food. Everybody had them. The American soldiers were issued them in their rations along with their salt pork in the war. You got so much per day. Everybody had the peas.
Okay, now you said you're baking bread out in the oven today also?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what process does that entail, getting it?
Well, first you have to start heating up the oven. So you go and you build a fire in there early in the morning, and maybe 4 or 5 hours later, depending on the day and how cold it is, the oven will be warm to the outside. And you pull out all the fire, clean out the inside of the oven, and then you put on the door because the temperature has to regulate. And while that's happening, you come inside and you start your dough, and you let it rise. And you punch it down, you knead it again, and you let it rise to the shape of your loaf. And then you go stick them in the oven, bake them. It bakes about the same time a conventional oven does, a little bit faster.
Okay. Well, I'm worn out this week. I guess they were ready to eat by the time they were done.
When they would bake in a large batch because it took so much work to heat up the oven and bake. They do it maybe once a week or once every other week, and they bake as much bread as they could keep
possible.
Good during that time.
Okay.
Before it would go bad.
Okay, well, we're going to step outside and take a quick peek at the oven, see how that's progressing. And like I said, there's quite a bit going on here today. It's a beautiful day. Light breeze. I guess about 75 degrees. It's almost a perfect day. And, I'll move out here to the oven right now, see what's going on. And it looks like it's getting there. There's a roaring fire going. I'm not sure of the temperature yet, but how are you doing this morning? And how are you this morning?
I'm doing good.
Okay, can you tell us what's going on here today?
We're going to be cooking in the beehive oven, and what you do is you put a fire in there early in the morning, and then later on in the day, when you can feel the heat through the outside of the clay, you pull the fire out, and you can put bread in there or anything that you want to bake.
Okay.
They would often make pies with meat or onions inside instead of fruit, as we know today. They would bake those in there. And then at the end of the day, they would put a clay pot of beans with whatever else was left over that night.
Okay.
And they would cook that overnight and then have it the next day already prepared for them.
Okay, how long did this process take from start to finish, approximately?
I would guess maybe, I'm not sure what time it is now, but we got here at 8 this morning, or 8:30.
It's about 11:15 now.
And it's still got maybe an hour or two left, so.
Okay.
Probably 3 hours, maybe more.
So once you have it heated and you put your dough in it, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can last the whole day, the heat. It maintains it very well, the clay.
Okay, so you don't have to close this one up?
You do. if you want to. Well, sometimes it's too hot to close up.
Oh, okay,
and it'll just
right.
burn. But you can put a wooden door over the front, and it helps maintain the heat regulations and keeps heat inside also.
Okay. All right, well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll move back out front where we have a lot of, get some more information about spices and things that they used years ago. Speak with our resident expert. Good morning. What is your name?
I'm Gwen.
Okay, Gwen. Nice to meet
nice
you.
Nice to meet you.
Can you tell us what you have out here today?
Actually, this is a small sampling of random items that you may find in a colonial pantry. I have things that would cross all socioeconomic lines here, so from the poorest to some of the things that you'd find in a wealthier pantry. First off, let's start with corn, one of the basic things. The natives have shared with the colonists corn. They've learned how to cultivate it and how important it is as a food source. So they're growing it now. They're grinding it up into a coarse ground that they're using to cook mush, something called mush. You'll see it repeatedly in documents. Grind it even finer and make it into a corn meal, which they would fashion into hoe cakes. Put them on little boards, a bannock board by the fire on the hearth, and cook them that way if you didn't have a griddle. So they were using that as a main staple in their diet, mush and Indian bread or hoe cakes and cornmeal. They also were parching it, slow roasting it by the fire. It's very soft to eat. It tastes like Fritos if you want to know what the flavor would be like. High in carbohydrates, so it's an excellent source of energy, very lightweight, portable. Put it in your sack, and you're able to march and travel and still have the energy that you need to keep moving. You'll see it referenced in many period documents as well. Hardtack, ship's bread or biscuits, another common item that you would have found in almost all homes, colonial biscuits. It doesn't have any sugar or any fat in it, so it has a long shelf life. For food preservation, they would actually cook them up and put them in sacks and crocks and things, and they always had a ready meal. Very, very hard, so you would literally have to wet it, submerge it in a liquid of some type to soften it up so that you could eat it or consume it. They also would go out during the summer and the fall, and they would collect nuts and berries and fruits and dry them or preserve them and put them up so that they had food on hand. And here's an example of chestnuts and some other nuts and things that we have. The natives also showed them how to take acorns and process them and make in a flour, acorn flour. They would add that to their meal to stretch it out. They're also using rice and chestnuts to do the same thing. We have tons of rice in the Carolinas.
Right.
By mid-century, we're shipping out lots and lots of rice. It's made us hyper-wealthy. Well, they grind that up as well into a flour and use it, not only to eat the plain rice, but the flour to stretch out their bread and things. Sugar was a very expensive item during the colonial period. Not many colonial families had access to it. You just didn't sweeten things. If you had a special event, you may use sugar for something out to bake special, but you just didn't randomly use sugar like we do today. When sugar comes out of the sugar cane in the islands is where it's grown, it's really dark brown. Muscovado sugar is the closest to sugar from the sugar cane that you can find in the stores today. It's very sticky. It has a lot of molasses and spice to it. They put that sugar, once they get it out, into a cone-shaped sieve, and they wash it and rinse it in the refining process. The two byproducts of that are rum and molasses. So you're getting rum out of the islands where sugar cane is grown. That's why the British have so much rum, because they control the islands during this time period. If you have sugar, you can make confit. Confit, C-O-M-F-I-T, is a candy in the 18th century. They would take bits of spices or herbs and seeds from those herbs. They may take oils they've extracted from peppermints and rinds from lemon and oranges, and they roll these things around in sugar over and over and over again, nuts and things, and coat them with sugar, and that's what they made into a candy. Fennel seed tastes like licorice. Fennel is an herb that we use to cook with, but they would actually take the seeds and coat them in sugar and make them into candies. Peppermints, Jordan almonds look exactly like they did in the 18th century. Any of those things you're going to see, they would have been available to people that had money and were able to purchase them straight out. They also flavored their foods with spices. kitchen pepper is a mixture of salt, pepper, nutmeg, allspice, cinnamon. It's got lots of things in it. Very, very nice additive to foods. They use vanilla and cinnamon and nutmeg. Mustard and ketchup. Mustard and ketchup in the 18th century is not what you think of today. It was not made out of tomatoes. That's a very modern condiment. Anything but tomatoes, mushrooms, garlic, anchovies, onions, vinegars, spices are the things that they would use to make ketchup. It literally means sauce in Indonesian language, ketchup does. Think Worcestershire, soy sauce, teriyaki sauce. About the closest to 18th century ketchup I can think that you would taste modern day would be Worcestershire sauce, if you wanted to go out and buy that. And then mustard was not the yellow French's mustard that we have today. It was actually, they would take the seeds, grind them up because they are prone to mildew. They don't store very well. So they would grind them up, add a little bit of honey and water to them, and form them into cakes and dry them, bake them and dry them out. And when you needed mustard, you'd simply take a grater and you would grate the mustard cake or ball into your dish for flavoring. And then we also have teas here on the table just to show you. The preferred tea or the most commonly seen tea prior to the Boston Tea Party and the beginning of the Revolution is gunpowder tea. It looks, it's called gunpowder tea because it resembles gunpowder, and the little pellets are really hard. The leaves are picked green and rolled into tiny balls and dried, and it just resembles gunpowder. That's why it has that name. After the Tea Party and the Revolution begins, Benjamin Franklin encourages us to be patriotic and drink teas from our own backyard. So we're going to start using lavender and thyme and spearmint and lemon balm and bee balm and things that we're growing in our own garden to make teas, to be patriotic. Liberty teas is what they're called.
Oh, wow. Okay. Told you she's an expert. Okay. Well, tell us about your experience out here today. Are you enjoying yourself?
Oh, it's a beautiful day. The site is phenomenal. It's one of my favorite places to come. It's so relaxing. The people are so nice. The visitors are very interested in what we have to show and talk about. It's just a beautiful site. Bring a picnic lunch and read a book.
It's a perfect day out here.
Explore history, really. It's in our backyard.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, there you have it. I guess we're about to wrap up. I'm not sure of the time. But like I said, our next broadcast will be October the 10th, which will be the Autumn Candlelight Tour out at Starfort. That'll be in the evening. You can walk along the trail just around dusk, and we'll have reenactors along the trail, which will tell you about 18th century life back then. And like I said, we learned quite a bit today about the history of 96, the different foods and different things that they traded. And as I said, it's a beautiful day. Just bring your family out. Come on out here and have a great time. It's right in your own backyard, and it's a free event for the whole family. So I'm your host, Robert Hart, and that's going to be it. We're signing off for now. Bye-bye.